Previously, on Saturday morning Snicktoons, I broke down the season one episode of X-Men the Animated Series called Captive Hearts. It is the fifth episode of the first season, and this episode featured the moving to the center, moving to the foreground, the Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Wolverine love triangle. If you can really even call it that. It's not so much a love triangle as it is Scott and Jean are a couple and Logan is in love with Jean. The episode also introduced the Morlocks. It moved Storm further into her role as a leader on the team, and it also brought to light some more of Storm's backstory. It's a great episode, and the Morlocks themselves are characters who stick around for at least a few more episodes throughout the entire run of the series. For today's episode, we are going to talk about Season 1, Episode 6 of X-Men the Animated Series, an episode called Cold Vengeance. And for the first time ever, I will be bringing on a guest host to help me in that endeavor. So, Bubs, as I mentioned at the top of the show, this is going to be the first ever episode of Talkin' Snicked or Saturday Morning Snicktoons that I have ever brought on a guest to help me break down the episode. And this is a guest that I am super pleased to have on the show. Honestly, if it weren't for this guy, Talkin' Snicked probably would not exist anymore. He is the biggest reason that I am here today. Talking about Wolverine, talking about X-Men. He's the reason why I've got Talking Snicked and Saturday Morning Snicktoons going again. And he's also a big reason why I brought the show back in March. He has helped me get my podcast going, get the juices flowing, and just get that desire again. He has probably one of my favorite podcasts out there today, a podcast called Marvel Plus, and I have had the pleasure of being on his show several times, and I wanted to return that favor. Today, I am bringing on Marvel Plus's Brett Scott. Brett, welcome to Talkin' Snicked. Welcome to Saturday Morning Snicktoons.
Thank you, man. I feel like we've already done this before because we did an episode of Marvel Plus where you pretended to be the host of Marvel Plus.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That was really where I was like, you know what? Maybe I should start doing guests too, because it's a lot of fun to have someone on and just chat about things that we have in common. And obviously Marvel fandom is one of those things. So Brett, walk me through, how did you begin Marvel Plus? Like, why did you decide on Marvel Plus as the show that you were going to do as your, not first podcast or only podcast, but like the main one that I see you promoting?
Yeah. Yeah. This might get a little long winded, but
that's fine.
So or I can make it really short. No one had taken the name, and I was like, this is a really clever name and I'm going to grab it up before anybody else does. And that was it. And then once I had the name, I kind of had to do it. You know what I mean? I've been a big fan of the MCU throughout its existence. When they announced that they were going to be doing series, I don't know what exactly, like when it was exactly. It was probably around the time they announced the series, though, at least the first four series. They said, oh, there's going to be a Wanda and Vision series. There's going to be a show with the Falcon and the Winter Soldier and Loki. And I was like, man, that is going to be so cool. Like, that is really doing something different for the MCU. And I'm already a podcaster at this point, right? I'm doing different podcasts where I review movies, I review TV series, all kinds of stuff. I share my comic book collection, all these things. And I was like, you know, I would love to do an MCU podcast. But, you know, I was thinking there are so many people out there with much, much more knowledge than me. Like there's much more knowledgeable people out there who just, you know, they have deep cuts, comic book background knowledge and all this. And I was a little intimidated at first, but then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to do it because I love talking about the stuff. And I just hope that that would be enough, that like that passion would come through. And it wouldn't mean, it wouldn't be so detrimental that I didn't have all of the comic book background knowledge. I didn't have all of the deep cut knowledge that, that other people had. And so I just went for it. I started it up and somehow it evolved into a show where I invited a guest on every week. And that was mainly probably because of that lack of knowledge. Like I read comic books. I have a comic book background, but nowhere near as deep as some of the people that I have on, and definitely not in the areas of some of this stuff that we're talking about on the show. Like a lot of it is based in the 70s, and I just haven't went back and read those books. So that's where the idea to have guests on every week came from, and then that's how the show came to be. I'm like, every week I'm going to bring on a new guest. Sometimes I'm going to bring repeat guests back that I like a lot, such as yourself. And that's it. That's the origin of Marvel Plus.
Nice. I like how it started off as like a way for you to, well, sort of take the easy way out, kind of. Like, you know what? I'm just going to push the hosting on someone else.
Yeah.
I'm going to get all the credit for the show. But it makes for such an engaging show. You know, you have different guests bringing in different perspectives every week, which I love to hear. And yeah, some of them have a lot of really great background knowledge and deep cut knowledge, and others don't. And I love hearing all the different groups of fans and different people that come on. So, and I've had a blast coming on your show. So that's awesome. So you're a big fan of Marvel. You mentioned the comics, and I know that you and I got acquainted, because you were a fan of my show. You actually reached out to me a couple of times, to yes. give compliments and kudos to Talkin' Snick. So thank you for that. I appreciate that. I assume then that means that you have an X-Men background of some sort.
Yes. Yeah. And, I mean, are you asking where that started or?
Yeah, let's jump into it, man. If you say you have a somewhat of a comic book background, let's talk about your origins of X-Men fandom. Because I know that in conversations that you and I have had, even off air, not even on Marvel Plus, that, you know, both you and I are huge X-Men fans.
Mm-hmm.
And I've chronicled where my fandom started. Tell me where yours did.
Well, it started in the same place, like where we're going to be talking about tonight, right? It started with X-Men, the animated series. I honestly didn't even know about Pride of the X-Men, which I know that was the first kind of animated X-Men that we got. But you know, when I was a kid in the 90s, X-Men, the animated series was everything. It was huge. I mean, it spawned all these toys. I didn't even know there were comic books at this point, right? There was just a show and there were toys, and that's enough for a, you know, how old was I? 7, 8, 9 years old when it was first coming out. And I was like, I loved it. All these people with these powers, like, you know, and muscles. Like, I'll be honest. I've always been obsessed with like these big, muscular, you know, powerful characters, right? Ever since I was a little kid. And it eventually evolved into me being really into like bodybuilding fandom and stuff like that. But that's another story. That's where it all started, man. X-Men, the animated series. And then one day I was in a grocery store. This was back when they had spinner racks in every grocery store. And I was standing there in line, I think, with my parents. And I looked over and I see this spinner rack. And, it had always been there, but it never caught my eye. It didn't mean anything to me. But when I looked over and I saw X-Men books. And those, I was, you know, in my, it just clicked. I said, these are the characters I watch on TV every week that I love. And so finding out that there were, you know, years and years of stories that I didn't know about these characters was like this revelation. And from then on, I definitely took a long break. But, for most of my childhood thereafter, I was not only into the TV series, but I was also into the comic books. And eventually, you know, the films that came later.
So do you remember what the first X-Men comic you got was?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I bought two of them first time ever. The first one that I bought was Wolverine number 95. And it had this big, the cover was like action packed, right? It was Vindicator just smashing Wolverine into the ground. That was the cover. And I'm like, wow, this is incredible. I don't even know who this other guy is. You know, I'm just like, Wolverine is getting smashed into the ground. And by that point, Wolverine was my favorite character from the TV series. So I'm like, I am buying this book. I'm a comic book guy now. You know, I knew other kids who were comic book readers, but I never gave it any thoughts. And that's when I decided, like, I guess this is me now. I'm going to buy comic books. And so I did. I bought that. And then I think I bought X-Men Adventures, which was basically an adaptation of the cartoon into comic book form. So those were my first comics.
Awesome. What a way to start, dude. That's cool. I like the serendipity of it. Just like at the store, you kind of glance over. Oh, hey, I know what these guys are.
Yeah.
That's cool. I don't quite remember that issue of Wolverine. So I'm definitely going to have to check that one out again.
Yeah, first ever. And it's, you know, I feel like first issues or first runs or, you know, wherever you start in your fandom is usually your favorite, you know, and I don't know a lot of people who the mid to late 90s is their favorite era of comic books. In fact, that's kind of like the opposite of what's true for most people. But for me, I mean, it was all about that because that was where I started. Just like that Wolverine number 95 may not have been a very special issue at all. But, you know, I remember it to this day because it was the first one I got. So to me, it's a fantastic issue. Highly recommend.
No, I can relate to having like a favorite that people are like, what? What is that? I mean, you've heard my Cap Wolf story. I did a whole episode about how that was like the first comic I ever chose, you know, for myself and everything. And it's this really like somewhat crappy story of just Captain America just randomly becoming a werewolf. So I can relate to that. And yeah, man, like if you listen to any other X-Men podcast, you would think that the mid to late 90s is just the absolute worst stuff that you will ever read. And I have such a fond space, you know, in my like such fond memories of the late 90s. Like I remember going to the grocery store myself and picking out, you know, anything that had X on the cover, X-Men, X-Force, X-Factor. Uncanny yep. X-Men, Generation X, whatever. If it has characters that I somewhat recognize, as long as there was an X, I was picking it up. And like, I ended up collecting the entire Onslaught arc, including the crossovers with Avengers and the Iron Man issues from the grocery store, just because that happened to be what they had on the racks whenever I would go, you know, weekly grocery shopping with my parents. So yeah. Like, I love Onslaught as an arc, and if you listen to any other X-Men podcast, they would say that it's probably like the worst X-Men story from the 90s you'd ever read.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, cool. So is it safe to assume then, saying that Wolverine was your favorite on the show, Wolverine was the first comic you ever got, is Wolverine your favorite X character?
100%. Obviously, I sought out your podcast. Yours was actually probably one of the first comic book podcasts that I ever listened to. I listened to one other one. It was the Uncanny X-Cast, but around that same time, I discovered your podcast. And that was the first thing I searched, though. Before I even searched X-Men, I searched Wolverine. And your show popped up. There were some other shows, but I liked your name, Talkin' Snicked. I thought it was clever, and I was like, okay, I'm going to give this one a shot. And I binged it all, man. I binged all of it. I think you were still putting out episodes pretty regularly at that point. It was like 2018. And then all of a sudden you disappeared, man. And I was like, what's going on? No, this is the only Wolverine podcast. And I was hearing stories from you that I didn't know, you know, that I had never read. And stories where he crosses over and alternate versions of Wolverine and just stuff that I didn't even know about. Yeah. So I was a Wolverine fan. That was the first podcast I ever sought out. And he's just always been the guy, man. I love underdogs, you know, and it is seemingly invincible, indestructible as Wolverine is and has become, through the years. I still look at him as an underdog because he's like this little guy and he's always fighting much bigger opponents, much stronger opponents. And I don't know, something about that has always resonated with me. He was the guy who fights off bullies. You know what I mean? He's the guy that fights the big bad.
Yeah, definitely. So, like the dude who never backs down, like no matter how the deck is stacked against him, or at least how it seems the deck is stacked against him, he just never backs down. He's always there. To be like, no, this ain't right. I'm going to fight you because no one else can or no one else will.
That's it. That's it.
Awesome. Okay, perfect. So we mentioned Wolverine, like, never backing down from a fight. You always say that he's got these big villains that he goes up against. Mm-hmm. Let's jump into, and I had you prepare this ahead of time, so it's not like we're doing this on the fly, but let's jump into a top five. Let's do top five Wolverine villains from least to best.
Yeah, I'm glad that you told me ahead of time, because I needed some time to put this list together to, like, really think about my answers, because he has a lot of great villains, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's hard to narrow down a five, you know. I feel like I mm-hmm. could interchange a lot of these with, you know, a top 10 at different times when I'm thinking about different fights that he's had, different arcs. And so this list could change depending on when you catch me, but today this is my list. So did you want me to start?
Yeah, why don't you give me your number five?
Okay, number five. I was going to, in this spot, I had completely prepared to give you Omega Red. That was my answer for number five all day long until about an hour ago. An hour ago, I thought of someone else I wanted to put there. My number five is Magneto.
Ooh, interesting.
And the reason it's Magneto, because, you know, Magneto, you think him as more of a Xavier foe or an X-Men at large foe, right? Like,
yeah,
not necessarily a Wolverine villain. But the dynamic of Wolverine being full of metal and Magneto being able to control that metal has always been Wolverine is one of the only people that could just completely dominate Wolverine and him really have no chance if Magneto wants him to have no chance. So that alone makes him an awesome foe. But the fact that Magneto once pulled the adamantium right out of Wolverine, that's what solidified it for me. Like, and that was one of those 90s moments that stands out in my head as, like, one of my all-time favorite moments in Wolverine history. So, number five, Magneto.
Nice. I'm liking this outside the box thinking, because coming over to me, my number five is Omega Red. That's who I've got in the number five spot.
Fantastic.
I love Omega Red as a Wolverine villain because he's like the communist version of Wolverine, right? If Wolverine was supposed to be this weapon, this killing machine that was on the side of good, then Omega Red would be the exact opposite, right? He's the killing machine on the side of the bad guys. I mean, obviously from our perspective, I'm sure from their perspective, Logan's a bad guy, Omega Red's the good guy. But I love the fact that, like, Omega Red is, he's just the opposite of Wolverine almost in every way. And I love that his power, like most of Wolverine's best foes, and we'll probably see as we go down our lists, but most of Wolverine's foes seem to have powers that, like, in some way, shape, or form, counteract one of or more of Wolverine's powers. And I like that Omega Red is one of those people that he has to, like, take out the life essence of people to survive. And who better to do that against than Wolverine, the guy who's constantly regenerating? Probably one of the few people who could actually hurt Wolverine in a way that almost no one else can. So, yeah, for me, my number five is Omega Red.
Very cool. Yeah, Omega Red, he didn't make my top five. I'll go ahead and show my hand there. Obviously, he was going to be number five. But just from the beginning, the first time I ever saw him, I thought he looked so cool. Like, oh, man, like, just that alone, I think he is definitely the coolest looking. If we're doing coolest looking Wolverine villains, I think he'd be in the top spot. But yeah, Omega Red, very cool character. Kind of like how you were saying he's just the opposite, right? He's the Russian version. It's like Cap and Red Guardian, right? I love how they have all the red in their name automatically if they're from Russia, but
yep.
Yeah. Great choice. I like that. Okay.
All right, moving on, man. What do you got in your number four spot?
You're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I'm remembering it this way, okay?
Okay.
Sometimes I get some of these early Wolverine stories mixed up, but I definitely know this character played a major role, especially early on, and especially in one of our favorite places to talk about, you know, or to see Wolverine have adventures in Japan. So My number four is Silver Samurai. Silver Samurai for me, okay, so what I was going to make sure with you about is, because I have this in my collection, but I haven't read it in a while. So the Wolverine mini features Silver Samurai, correct?
No.
No? Okay, so what story am I thinking of? Early on, is it Kitty Pryde in Wolverine?
Honestly, on the top of my head, I'm not remembering Silver Samurai in that story. I know Ogun was the main bad guy. He was the one that was like doing the brainwashing and kind of taking over Kitty. But I think there was like an interlude at some point with Yukio, and they maybe mentioned Silver Samurai. I think what you're thinking of, Brett, there was like a sequel, like a two-issue story in Uncanny X-Men that was like a sequel to that mini. Where, because if you remember, the mini ends with the X-Men getting the wedding invitation.
Yes, that is it. That's exactly what I'm thinking of.
So they go out to Japan. It's Uncanny X-Men, off the top of my head, 172 and 173. It might be 171 and 172, but off the top of my head, I'm thinking 172, 173, where they go back to Japan. It's like the first storyline where Rogue joins the team. Artwork by Paul Smith. Oh, man, that era. So good. So tell me about why you have Silver Samurai on your list.
Well, and just last of all, like, firstly, I guess, I think another reason I mixed that up is because of the Wolverine film, which was a rendition on the Wolverine mini.
Mm-hmm.
And they included a version of Silver Samurai in that. They incorporated him anyway. But you're exactly right. It is the story, like, that's in X-Men right after that mini takes place.
Yes.
So, I don't know. I just think he's cool, man. I like anything in Japan. I also, like, I almost put the hand in here. Like, I like Wolverine stories in Japan. Now, that's not the only place I like Wolverine stories. I like Wolverine in Canada. I like Wolverine in New Orleans. Like, there's all kinds of different places I like Wolverine. But I love to see him go to Japan, and I love stories about Wolverine the warrior, the Wolverine the samurai, Wolverine, you know, the man, right? I know you talk about a lot how, you know, Wolverine is, you know, there's Logan, the man of Logan is what you see in that early era. Like, you see in, whenever he's in Japan, you're getting Wolverine the man. And then some other places, a lot of times, you get this, like, savage beast of Wolverine. And I like seeing Wolverine kind of revert back to his, like, and, like, what's the word? It's, like, humanity. He, like, returns to humanity anytime he's in Japan. There's, like, this honorable samurai. I know you've described it many times on your podcast, so maybe you have the words, but I don't know. Silver Samurai is the coolest of the foes in Japan to me. I think he looks the coolest. I think he's the funnest. That's it.
Nice. Yeah, and he's another character whose powers are, like, to be a foil to Wolverine. You know, he has the power to, I guess, like, focus his energy into his sword blade. And then when he's doing that, it allows him to cut through anything. And, like, what's one of Wolverine's big powers? Well, not powers, but one of the big things about him, he's indestructible, right? He can't be defeated. His claws can't be removed. His arms and limbs and things, like, he can't lose that stuff. He has an indestructible skeleton. But then you have Silver Samurai, who has a power to cut through any substance, even adamantium, even vibranium, you know, with his mutant ability. So it's another one of those things where it's not just Wolverine going up against a bunch of guys who he's invincible against, you know, like the Reavers pretty much. Like, he actually faces danger when he goes up against Harada.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like Magneto, right? Like that's great. You worded it much better than I could.
No, you had it. You nailed it.
All right. Who's your number four?
So my number four is another Japanese character. This one is even more similar to Wolverine than, you know, Omega Red or Silver Samurai. This is Lady Deathstrike.
Yes.
Now, she's not a mutant, but she has been enhanced. I just mentioned the Reavers, Lady Deathstrike, Yukio. Yuriko Oyama. She was enhanced by the Reavers at the body shop, I believe, and she has, you know, the ability to heal, just like Wolverine. She's got, like, adamantium fingernails and everything.
And I just love how she has like this personal vendetta against Wolverine, even if it is a little misguided. You know, her father in the comics was the character who actually developed the adamantium bonding process. For whatever reason, she thinks that Wolverine like stole that, you know, that's like her birthright that was stolen from her by Wolverine. So I just love that she's just this opposite version of Wolverine, but she does the exact same stuff and just hates him with a passion. Like, I like a villain who sometimes they don't really need a reason to be bad other than they just hate the hero.
Awesome. Dude, that's really cool because that leads right into my number three, which is Lady Deathstrike. So basically for all the same reasons, I will say though that, you know, it's probably the same with you. I first encountered this character on the animated series and I thought it was the coolest character, like having the fact that she had this adamantium fingertips, right? It was cool. Anytime they talked about Wolverine's past or somehow referred back to either Weapon X or time he spent in Japan or, you know, past loves, Silver Fox, Mariko, I love that stuff. So when they go back and when you have someone to show up like Lady Deathstrike, and you're like, who is this? And then she's got this whole backstory where she's like you said, she's got this vendetta against him. And it's kind of it's a hard to believe vendetta, honestly, a little bit. But it works. I like that she just has this hatred for him that almost doesn't make any rightly sense. Either way, though, she has this malice for him and great character.
Yeah, absolutely. No, love Lady Deathstrike. Big fan. So that leads into my number three, who is another Japanese character. You can see that I have kind of like a Wolverine in Japan fetish going on here, can't you?
I see that. Yeah.
So this character, I believe he first appeared in the Mark Millar written series Wolverine Enemy of the State, and then into the sequel series to that, which was Wolverine Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. This is a character who, again, has an ability that's like tailor-made to stop Wolverine, and this is the Gorgon. So his mutant ability, like, as you would expect from someone named the Gorgon, like Medusa, she was a Gorgon, if you make eye contact, then, like, he just kills you. And the storyline of Enemy of the State is he was leading the Hand, and he actually, like, they kill Wolverine and resurrect him as a member of the Hand and brainwash him and everything. But that storyline alone was enough for him to crack my top three. I loved that storyline. I loved all the implications. They didn't explore every facet of it, and it hasn't really come up too much since. I believe presently in the comics, the Gorgon is actually on Krakoa as part of this whole Krakoa era. But I'm not caught up with the whole Hickman stuff yet. But I know that he's been showing up again, so I'm curious to see how that will play out, if he'll factor into, like, the current Wolverine or the current X-Force series. Really looking forward to seeing some more of that. But, yeah, that one arc alone, I was like, man, the Gorgon is awesome. Like, perfect power, like, oh, you can heal? Well, you can't heal from instant death, so good luck with that. I just loved that.
Yeah, that's a storyline that I have not read, and I keep meaning to, and I actually forget a lot of times what the name of the storyline is, so thanks for reminding me. But I remember you going through it on the podcast, and I remember thinking, like, that's what makes me want to read it. And I just kind of forgot to read it, but I'm definitely going to go do that now. So Enemy of the State.
Yeah, it was six issues. If you read the like the whole 12 issue story, then you get Enemy of the State and Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. But yeah, it's like 12 issues straight through. I don't know why they break it up into two 6-issue arcs, rather than just calling it like the Enemy of the State, like omnibus, and just giving it all 12. But the way they broke it up, it's awesome. It's probably one of my favorite Wolverine stories.
What was that part of? Was that like part of volume 2 somewhere, or is that later on? When did they do that?
That was, it started when the Wolverine series was on like the Marvel Knights imprint.
Okay.
So I think it's like a separate volume because it had like a brand new numbering, and I think it was happening like concurrently with like right around when Greg Rucka had taken over and was doing Wolverine as well, like in those early aughts. I want to say it was like 2003, 2004, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. It's so good. The artwork from John Romita Jr. is, in my opinion, Romita Jr.'s best artwork that he's ever done. I'm not a huge Romita Jr. fan personally. Like, he had some good Spider-Man stuff. He was decent on X-Men in the early 90s, but I just feel that these like 12 issues was like the best storytelling he's done. And of course, it didn't hurt that Mark Miller was writing.
Awesome. I'm going to check that out for sure. All right. Where are we at on this list? We're at my number two?
Your number two.
Okay. My number two is not so much a person, but an organization. My number two is Weapon X. The Weapon X program, I feel like, is a Wolverine villain. Because it's something that's just always there, right? It's always in some way coming back into play. Not only is it haunting him through memories or, you know, for a long time, these like shattered memories that he couldn't quite remember. I remember, once again, it was something that came from the TV series for me. The first time I saw Weapon X depicted was when they did it on the animated series. And I didn't even know at the time that this was a recent story. You know, Barry Windsor Smith's Weapon X was not much before they did it on the series. So it was kind of cool to find that out later and then go back and read, you know, Wolverine's origin. But I've always been just obsessed with this. I almost wish Wolverine still had a past that was a little more shrouded in mystery, because that was one of my favorite aspects of the character, is that we didn't know his origin. All we had is these fragmented memories that every once in a while you get a glimpse of. But that was one of them. Weapon X, it was like this fleeting thing that you didn't quite know exactly what happened, or like, then you know that he got the adamantium put in, but you didn't know what happened right after or right before, you know, what was he doing? So yeah, and just the fact that it keeps coming into play throughout his life, you know, he's still reckoning with Weapon X. You know, he has encounters with the Weapon X program, and who is it, Stryker, and all of these people that were involved with Weapon X throughout his life. He keeps having to reckon with this thing from his past. So Weapon X is my number two.
Awesome. My number two, I'm going to go with, and this is going to be controversial, and I think you're going to see that our one and twos are flopped, because my number two, I'm going to go with Sabretooth.
Stop it.
I know. It's weird to say Sabretooth is not my number one, right? I think Sabretooth is an excellent villain. He's a perfect villain for Wolverine. I think most of Wolverine's best stories on his own feature Sabretooth antagonizing him in some way, shape, or form. And not only that, Sabretooth has gotten so much development outside of being this Wolverine villain. Obviously, his first appearance coming way back in Iron Fist, he's had run-ins with Spider-Man, and he even has some history with Gambit. But obviously, the Wolverine thing, his biggest thing, but they've gone through and they've made sure to give him his own backstory and to make him, I don't know if compelling is the right word. Sympathetic certainly isn't the right word, but they've given you enough to invest in the character. Even if you're investing in him as a villain, like they've still gone through and like made sure to give him a very harrowing backstory, like something that you want to read about, even if this guy is a maniac, even if this is a guy that you would want to steer clear of no matter what. So I'm actually going to go with Sabretooth as my number two, if only because I think there are better stories with a particular other villain.
Okay. All right. Well, I think you're just being a contrarian. And I also think you're trying to steal my thunder from number one. See, if you talk about it first, then I got nothing to say. But no, okay. So we know Sabretooth is my number one. To one thing you were saying about his story being compelling, even though he's still this terrible person, there's really no sympathy to be had for him. I feel like it's the same way with, you know, we're obsessed, you know, as a society with like serial killers. We're obsessed with like these horrible, horrible people. We'd never want anything to do with them, However, we want to know all the details. We want to know their background. We want to know how they were raised, like what their parents were like, you know, when they first killed someone, you know, how that went down. It's the same thing with someone as vicious as Sabretooth, right? To me, he basically is like the archetype of like serial killer. That's who he is. And on top of that, like has this animalistic nature to go along with it. So it's not just this calculated serial killer. He's like this vicious, raging serial killer, right? Also, I think my favorite thing and the thing that makes him my favorite Wolverine villain is this idea of him coming back every year on Wolverine's birthday to throw down, just to beat the hell out of Wolverine, really. That's usually how it ends up. And the fact that he just tortures this guy, like killing women that he loves, there's no end to what this guy will do to hurt Wolverine. And so that's why I think he's the best. He's the most vicious. He's the most ruthless. He's the best. Sabretooth's the best.
Nice. Yeah. He's the Joker to Wolverine's Batman, right? He's the perfect foil for the character.
For sure.
Did you ever read, and I know that I talked about it on the show a long time ago, but did you ever have a chance to read the Darkclaw amalgam,
no.
the Batman Wolverine stuff?
No. I remember I had the Marvel versus DC, the main books, like the four books that came out.
Oh, okay.
But I never got any of the individual things. Like, I don't remember. Didn't they have individual books?
Yeah, they did. Like, they did one wave of like number ones, and then I think at the end of the after they wrapped it all up, they did like a second wave.
Yeah, I just remember the image of Darkclaw. But go ahead.
Nice. So in Darkclaw, the Joker is merged with Sabretooth to make the Hyena.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So it's you take all the sadism that that Sabretooth has, and then you have all the like maniacal laughter and stuff, you know, this twisted sense of humor that you'd get from the Joker. And you just put it together, and that gives you the Hyena. I always just thought that was really funny. He looked a lot like Sabretooth, you know, but he had like the white, pale face, and then all of his hair on his mane and stuff was green. It was really cool.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. Yeah, it goes perfectly to your point too, that it's like he's the Joker to Wolverine's Batman. I like that. Who's your number one, man?
So my number one, and this is probably just because of recency bias, because I'm reading the prose novel right now, and it's given me a whole lot of backstory that they never fleshed out in the comic. I mean, obviously it's not canon, but I'm going to go with Weapon X as my main favorite Wolverine villain. If only because, like you said, you know, there's so much that could be traced back in Wolverine's life to Weapon X. Like, yeah, when he takes on Sabretooth, it's awesome, and those make for some of Wolverine's best stories. But like, a lot of this tortured past, that mystery that obviously some of it we've been able to peek behind the curtain, but a lot of that mystery that surrounds him, all the hardship in his life, that all came from Weapon X. And I think that even after like we got the whole Weapon Plus thing, like Weapon X was still this scary, shadowy organization. And like, I want to know about the professor, and I want to know about Dr. Cornelius and Carol Hines and Xander Rice and like all these characters that were there. Like, I want to know about everyone that was involved in Weapon X and like what they've done since and everything. So right now, obviously I've been talking about Weapon X a lot on Talkin' Snicked proper. So I think Weapon X is just like in my mind right now. So they ended up number one on my list. But yeah, man, Weapon X is my number one Wolverine villain. And I hope that we get more Weapon X stuff at some point.
Okay, well, I guess then I kind of foiled your number one a couple back. So I don't feel so bad about that anymore. But I agree wholeheartedly. Weapon X is such a part of Wolverine that, I mean, it's inseparable. He's not Wolverine without Weapon X. And
exactly.
So, yeah, I can't argue with that. Can't argue with it. I think that, you know, your podcast, and here we go. I'm just going to keep telling you how terrific your podcast is while I'm on here. But it got me to go and purchase these stories. Like I said, I was just getting back into comics about 5-6 years ago. when I happened to across your podcast about 3 years ago, it's what convinced me to hunt down, you know, I like physical books. I like to have the paper in my hands. It reminds me of being a kid. You know, it takes me back to my childhood. So, when I realized that I can get all of these great stories that people tell me to read in trades, I started doing that. And a lot of them I have gotten because of your recommendation and the stories you went through on the podcast. I went and got the Wolverine Mini, and then I went and the very next one I got, because you always say these are the two quintessential Wolverine stories, I went and got Weapon X, and I'm so glad that I got it and that I read through it. And I've read through it several times now in just the past couple years. Because, like I said, I had an image basically from the animated series of what happened. And having that story that was in what Marvel Comics Presents,
yes,
in like little bits at a time back in the day, having that all compiled into this trade paperback and going through that, it was so much more rich than what I thought I already had. Like, I thought I already had this great thing from like the animated series and just from hearing about Weapon X and knowing about Weapon X, but and you know, seeing it portrayed in the films even several times, but actually reading the story, I feel like it's so much more rich than anything we've seen on screen. So it bravo, great job getting me to read the books, and that's a fantastic pick, Weapon X.
I'm still waiting for my marketing checks from Marvel for all the stories I've recommended people to pick up.
Yep.
Nice. All right. Well, that was fun. I figured we would have a lot of overlap. I liked your Magneto pick, really outside the box. That was cool. And yeah, Sabretooth is a number one. I mean, you can't go wrong with Sabretooth. Like I said, he's got three categories of best stories, right? All of his stories in Japan that deal with him. That's like the only time he's ever able to renounce his bestial nature and choose his humanity is when he's in Japan. It brings out the best that his humanity has to offer. And then you've got Weapon X, which always seems to bring out his bestial nature, whether it is just the Weapon X series or the return to Weapon X that was like the first major arc that Larry Hama did. And then if it's not one of those, you know, then you have Sabretooth, who's really there to kind of challenge Wolverine as a superhero. You know, we kind of don't think of the X-Men as superheroes because I don't know. Like, I never really think of them as like, they're not on the same, I wouldn't say they're not on the same level, but they're not quite the same as like the Supermans or the Batmans, where they're these big time superheroes. It's like their stories are so much more, I don't know, grounded, like, yeah, oddly enough, because I mean, Batman's a human and these people do have superhero abilities and stuff. But like, I always just think of the X-Men as like so much more grounded and so much more like realistic, and it deals with, yeah, real world issues, and it's so relatable as a source material. But Sabretooth really does bring out like the superhero aspect of Wolverine. So yeah, those three.
Yeah. I had a couple honorable mentions, if I could throw those in there.
Yeah, please.
Obviously the Hulk, you know, we don't get that first appearance without the Hulk. And he's had some throwdowns with the Hulk throughout as well. Not just that first appearance, but later on in like the Old Man Logan series, he's like dealing with these futuristic versions of Hulk. And so Hulk's, you got to throw it in there. I didn't include it in my top five, but I feel like honorable mention. And then also, you were talking about this yesterday. You put some polls up on Instagram, and you were asking like who is a better. First, you were talking about Jean Grey and Mariko, and mm-hmm. and which one was Wolverine's true love? And you know, it turned out Mariko. Everyone agrees, and I couldn't agree more with that. But then also you put up one that was who dislikes Wolverine more, is like Cyclops and Vindicator, right?
Yeah. Who's got a bigger chip on their shoulder? Yeah.
Yes. And I honestly, I said Vindicator just because of how angry he seems to get anytime Wolverine's even mentioned. Cyclops though, I don't feel like it's so much just the animosity. Like, he doesn't just hate Wolverine. He's just annoyed by him. The guy isn't a team player. You know, Cyclops is the leader of the team. But I feel like Cyclops is an honorable mention just because, you know, we've even seen in an alternate version of reality, my favorite X-Men crossover event, the Age of Apocalypse, you've got a villain version of Cyclops for most of the series anyway. And then you got Wolverine as the hero who ends up with Jean Grey, strangely enough. But I've always felt like Cyclops, most people would consider him a villain, or at least a, not a villain, but you know, an antagonist to Wolverine. So I'd throw him in there. And then lastly, you got to put Ryan Reynolds in there.
Yeah, nice.
Dude, who has ripped Wolverine apart more than Ryan Reynolds?
No, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Sorry, I had to get that in there. That was my only joke of the show.
No, those are good. I like it. Especially Cyclops. I don't know if you ever read like the Schism arc where
No, but I know what it is. I know what it is, and I meant to even mention that kind of. Go ahead.
So there's a scene when like Scott and Logan are having this big fallout over a call in the field that Scott made. And somehow, because why wouldn't it, the argument ended up being about Jean Grey, who at this time in the comics has been dead for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. So the two of them are arguing, and like what finally set them off? Because up to this point, like for the last 3 years in the comics, they were – Logan had come to like not just respect Scott as a leader, but like him as a person. They had moved past all the Jean stuff, or so we thought. They were friends. They were on the same page. And then they get into this argument. There's this big falling out. The argument turns to Jean Grey, and the very last thing that Cyclops says is, "She never loved you." And like that was what set it off. Like that was the end. Wolverine pops his claws. Scott unleashes an optic blast, the schism happens, and like they've never been able to put it back together, at least in whatever's going on in Krakoa right now. I'm not sure, but
so that,
I just love that.
Question, because I don't know anything about the modern stuff. So is that after, I'm guessing, because you brought up the new Krakoa stuff, is that after or before the AVX stuff where they're basically Professor X is dead and Wolverine and Scott are at odds because of that, and there's like two different teams.
So Schism happened. Yeah, Schism happened like a year before AVX happened. So when AVX goes down, Wolverine has already started the Jean Grey School for Higher Learning in New York, and that's a big reason why Wolverine joined the Avengers and like opposed Cyclops and the X-Men during AVX.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Very cool.
Man, I really want to go on a tangent right now about how much I hate AVX, but I don't want to be super negative. So let's quickly change the subject. Let's jump into our discussion for today's episode.
Let's do it. I knew we would get there eventually.
Yeah, it was going to happen. It was bound to happen. All right. So we are here to break down and discuss season 1, episode 6 of X-Men, the animated series. It is the episode called Cold Vengeance. The original air date for this episode was February 6th, 1993. I was almost 8 years old. I was about a month away from my 8th birthday. This episode written by Michael Edens. Story edited by Eric Lewald, of course, and directed by Larry Houston. So, Brett, when I invited – you were the first person I invited when I decided I wanted to start doing guests. And this was like the first episode you picked. So why did you pick this one?
Well, first of all, that's untrue, Ryan. The first episode that I picked is Weapon X Lies in Videotape. But then I realized that's not for a really long time.
Okay, so, fair enough.
And I wanted to get on soon, so I was like, what's the first Wolverine-centric story? And while this, you know, it turns out that it's not completely Wolverine-centric, it's kind of named for his part of the story, but it's almost 50-50 a different story as well. But yeah, I chose Cold Vengeance because, yeah, Wolverine, Sabretooth, we were just talking about how epic of a pair they are. Yeah, so I'm like, what's the first Wolverine story? And it just happens to be the one where he's fighting Sabretooth. That's my episode.
Perfect. Well, it worked out. All right. So do you want to kick us off and walk us through the opening of the episode?
Sure. Yeah, I can do that. All right. So, okay. The first thing is the previously on X-Men thing. I wanted to get this in there because you talked about it, to me the other day. We were discussing this scene where Wolverine is holding the picture of Jean and Scott. And you were talking about, on your podcast the other day about how they actually have an action figure of Wolverine holding the photo sullenly in his bed. And I thought that was so great. And so it was a pleasant surprise when I turned this episode on, and then you get the previously on X-Men scene where that happens. And then, you know, he takes off, Scott and Jean walk in and he's gone. Right. But I did notice at the beginning of this episode, the first thing I noticed was a continuity error, because at the end of the last episode, Wolverine cuts that picture in half. He separates Scott and Jean perfectly into two pieces. In this episode, you see that he's like cut this weird circle out of the photo. It's not perfectly cut in half anymore. So I wanted to call that out first and foremost.
I think they're wearing different clothes too.
That could be. See? And there's a couple of those throughout this episode that I'm going to point out, because, you know, you can't go through a 90s era cartoon without having a little bit of fun with it. You know, as cool as the stories are, there's got to be a little bit of comedy in there because you just can't help it. So in the beginning of the episode, you see where Logan ended up, right? Because at the end of the last episode, they just say, he's gone. Cyclops is obviously not happy about this. And he's got a problem with everybody in this episode, because we'll go into that part later. But he has a problem with Gambit in this episode, too. So not just Logan. But you see Logan in Canada. We don't know where in Canada, but, you know, near the Arctic. So obviously pretty far up there. And the first thing he says is you see him cross country skiing. And he comes up on this ridge and looks over and he's like, no place like home. And they show this place that does not look inviting at all, which is perfect for Wolverine. But me watching it, I'm like, what are you talking about?
No, I like the cold more than I like the heat. But, you know, there's limits. Being inside the Arctic Circle, it was a little too cold.
Yeah, not my vacation spot for sure. So we got Wolverine up there. He's making his way through. And now you might have to. Steer me when the story split, because they start going back and forth between an A and a B story, right? Mm-hmm. We get Wolverine there. I don't know if the attack from Sabretooth happens yet, or if we see the X-Men first talking about Genosha.
We get the Sabretooth battle, because while Wolverine is standing there, you know, enjoying the nice, crisp, cool air, he's pretty much cold-cocked by the Klingon proverb slinging Sabretooth, you know, where Sabretooth like walks up behind him and knocks him down and yells, "Revenge is a dish best served cold."
Yeah, perfect. I love it. It's funny. So, you know what's great about the show is like when you're a kid, you know, things they really stand out now as an adult. But when you're a kid and you're watching this stuff on Saturday morning or weekday afternoons when it's in syndication, and you thought the show was so violent and that the battles were so awesome, but it's really not all that violent. You know, they couldn't show a whole lot. It was a lot of implied violence. And when you're mm-hmm. a kid, you think it's actually happening, but it's not, which was pretty cool. So when I was a kid, like, this was an epic battle, right? But really, Wolverine does not stab a single person or slash a single person throughout the entire series out. But if you would have asked me, back then, you know, or if you would have asked me now and I hadn't went back and watched the episodes recently, I would have told you, sure, like Logan's, he's cutting people up all the time. But no, of course he's not. This is a Saturday morning kid show. So right. that was the first. Go ahead.
Especially with the toy, you know, if you remember the Sabretooth action figure that would actually have like three slash marks across his belly that we could heal. And then you'd have Wolverine slash him again and he would actually have like three red slash marks. So you think back like, oh, yeah, Wolverine would slash him all the time. Like, that's how it happened.
Right.
But no.
Right. There's nothing like that. In fact, this fight is a little ridiculous. Like I said, I love the episode because it's Wolverine and Sabretooth. I like the back and forth between the two. And just the whole idea that Logan really at this point, he just wants some peace in his life, and Sabretooth is not letting this happen. And that's kind of the story of their entire relationship. Like Wolverine, every time he thinks he might be able to find some peace, Sabretooth shows up. Happy birthday! Like, so, but the fight. Basically, they roll around and play patty cake and like roll around in the snow until Wolverine falls off a cliff after it kind of collapses.
Yep. Yeah, it falls off and he ends up on like a little, not a glacier, but, you know, a little floaty thing of ice and just kind of is carried away by the tide.
Yes. All right. So then and obviously Sabretooth, at first I was thinking that Sabretooth doesn't know he's still alive for a while, but he does. He sees him actually come up and float away on the ice. And he's like, there's no way you'll survive. And then we get, you know, cutscene. We go to see now the X-Men storyline. And the first thing we hear is Scott, like, how dare you come in here spouting these lies? I'm not going to have you spouting off these lies. Like, God, man, like, really? Like, okay, Gambit heard a rumor that these Genosians are pretty cool folks. You know, they're inviting mutants. They're accepting of mutants. And Scott, like, right off the bat, he's like, you're spreading fake news, Gambit. Like, it was ridiculous. And that was the first time I realized, like, it's not just Logan that he's mad at. It's everyone.
Yes, everybody that's not Jean is going to face Scott's wrath at some point. The wrath of the wet blanket.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's the problem, you know? That's what this series did to Cyclops. I don't feel like that's who he is. I feel like he was portrayed that way in this series, and sadly that bled over into the first X-Men films, where I don't think he got enough character development. He was just the guy you were supposed to hate because he was with Jean and Wolverine wasn't, you know?
Right, yeah, like the guy that gives out stickers on Halloween instead of candy.
Yes, yes, the guy giving out fruit baskets on Halloween. I feel like the series really did him wrong. I really do. Like, yeah, he kind of has a stick up his butt in general, but they just made him like the most hateable person, and I don't think he needed to be that way. But alas, in this series, he is not a guy that anyone likes when they're watching the animated series. I don't care if he's your favorite character in the comics, you don't like him in the series, and if you say you do, you're lying.
Yes. I mean, I like him up to this point. I mean, he was cool, like, in the last episode, and I've tried to go out of my way to point out the few times that he's been cool up to this point. But, yeah, I think this is the turning point where everyone's like, you know what? Wolverine's cool, and Gambit's cool, and Cyclops is not.
Yeah. That's it. He should be, like, the cool guy, really. Like, if you think about who he is, you would imagine he's, like, the cool jock. But really, he's just kind of a nerd. Nobody really likes him. I don't know.
Right, yeah, no, I definitely. Luckily, Xavier comes in at that moment, and he's like, take a chill pill, Scott. This sounds good. It's worth looking into.
Yeah, Scott's that's actually...
like, all right, fine.
I love that. Professor comes in and shuts him down. He's like, no, Gambit's right. This sounds pretty cool. Let's go check it out. Okay. So Professor X says, you know what, we'll just turn this into a mission, right? He said, I think everybody could use a vacation. But, you know, a mission's not really a vacation. But either way, this is actually a trope from the comics. I know from the early X-Men comics that this happened like 5 or 6 times in the first 66. Professor X would announce, we're going on vacation. We're going to send you guys on vacation. This would happen several times, and obviously it always goes wrong. So... Mm-hmm. This is the first time we see it in the animated series. He says, all right, we're going to send 3 of you down there, and it's basically going to be a reconnaissance mission / vacation, right? So he sends Jubilee, Storm, and Gambit. And
yeah, I dig that team.
Yeah, so is that – do we next go back to Wolverine, or do we continue with that Genosha story? I feel like we go back and we find Wolverine being found by the Inuit people, right?
Yes, so back in the Arctic, Wolverine is found by like a boat full of Inuit fishermen while he's still kind of floating. And so they pull him up on the boat. The one guy in the Detroit Tigers hat says, we should sell him to the government. And then the other guy's like, no, he's injured. Let's take him home. And like the whole time, Sabretooth just like watching from a cliff, swearing revenge and all that. So they cut back to the village where Wolverine awakens. I love that he falls into the Arctic Ocean in like full on sub-zero Arctic gear. But he wakes up in the bed of like a, you know, the Inuit doctor guy, and he's just wearing his normal blue and yellow suit. So obviously Wolverine, like, even though he's going back home and he's in his snowsuit, he's got his costume on underneath.
Yeah, yeah, that or someone dressed him while he was sleeping. In they found this very strange looking costume, right? Like, yeah, this will work. We'll put this on him.
Yeah, this looks like it's good.
That's one thing I've noticed about this series, though. Like, people are in uniform way too often, and we'll get to another scene where that happens later. But the most ridiculous moments, people are in their uniform.
Yeah, well, you got to have the kids recognize what they look like so they could buy the toys, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's got to be it. Well, I was going to say, this. I get confused. I don't know if we go back to Genosha yet or not. I know that he comes out, and basically he wants to do some work. He says that, like, the work will help me feel better, and he feels like he owes it to this village to help him out after rescuing him. And so he goes out with them fishing, and that's where, like, the issue starts with, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, but the guy that quickly becomes very jealous of Logan.
You know, I didn't get the character's name either. I've just been calling him Tiger's Hat. I think that's indication enough that he's somewhat of a villain, right? Like, you can't be a Detroit Tigers fan if you're a good guy.
I was wondering where that hat came from. Like, well, naturally someone threw it away. Like that.
They flushed it down. Somehow it ended up in the Arctic. Yep. The colors faded because it's not blue and orange anymore. It's a brown and yellow now. So,
yeah. So this guy, he has it out for Wolverine. Basically, Wolverine's just doing good by this village. But this guy, he's really jealous. You know, this new guy comes in and he's showing him up. He's super strong. He's lifting these baskets of fish on his shoulders, these giant nets full of fish. And then, you know, he tries to do the same thing and collapses to the ground, which... it was a really silly scene. But yeah. Yeah. So that's going on. This guy is getting very jealous of Logan.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, after the fish, everything, the village, like, throws a party. They've got, like, a bouncy house or something like that. And so this dude just goes off on his own. Cause obviously he doesn't want to celebrate Logan. So, he goes off and he runs into Sabretooth.
Yeah. Hold on one second. Can I back up? There is a moment that I think we got to call attention to here.
Okay.
When they're out on the fishing boat and the kid, like, I don't know exactly what happens with the fishing, but Wolverine starts laughing. And I don't think we've ever heard Wolverine laugh like this, and we'll never hear it again. But he's cackling. Wolverine is cackling loudly. Ah! It's like the most, it's hilarious. And then later, when they're having the celebration in the village, and he decides he's going to go on the, you know, you said it's like a bouncy house, but it's more like that parachute that you would have in gym where you, like, you know, like,
oh, yeah, throwing
up in the air. So they're throwing up and he's like, whoa! It was some of the most, like, comical Wolverine moments that we see in the entire series.
Yeah. I'm going to make a note of this and, have to keep track of every time Wolverine laughs, which I think, yeah, so far we're at one.
That's it.
Nice. Yeah. So Tiger Hat meets up with Sabretooth. He calls him like a snow ghost at some point. Sabretooth is like, no, I'm a mutant and you're friends with Wolverine, so I'm going to destroy you and everyone that looks like you. And the guy's like, no, I hate Wolverine too. We should be friends.
Yeah.
I think they found out that both of their mother's names were Martha, and they decided they were going to go after Wolverine as a team.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I love it. Yeah. So that's perfect. So from there, we do go back to the Genosha story, right?
Yes.
Okay. Genosha, they arrive in Genosha, and this was the uniform problem that I have a problem with. I think Gambit forgot that they're supposed to be going undercover. Because, Storm and Jubilee, they're wearing their civvies, and Gambit goes in, like, full tactical gear with the trench coat. I'm surprised he doesn't have his staff in hand with, like, a glowing card when they arrive. Because, yeah, what is he doing? He didn't, at one point, so they check into the hotel, and, you know, then we quickly realize something's up because the hotel guy, the concierge, I guess, he goes off to the side and kind of sends a message to someone else, like, hey, these guys are mutants. And so there's something going on, something nefarious going on about Genosha. And then we see them lounging around in their bungalow. And Gambit's still in full gear. They're in like this tropical paradise place. He's got a full body armor on with a giant trench coat, like lounging out on a love seat, talking about, ah, this is the life, Shea. It's like ridiculous.
Do you remember back in Night of the Sentinels when everyone's at the mall? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Rogue's wearing her like short skirt. Storm's also wearing like, you know, a fairly casual, you know, business attire. And yeah. Gambit's in the card store and he's still got the, like, the face sock, the trench coat, yes. The like bright pink body armor, the big giant, like metallic shiny boots.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not like he doesn't have other outfits. We see him very coolly in one of the early episodes, right? Might have been one of the Night of the Sentinels episodes, coming in the middle of the night, and he's like, cool, he's got his ponytail in.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? He's in his nightwear.
Yeah, he's got like cool jeans on and like a t-shirt with, yeah, like you said, a ponytail, just looking normal.
Yeah, so he has other clothes. I don't know why they keep putting him in this silly getup. Because it's the most obvious, too. Like, it's a ridiculous outfit already. It's like a bright pinkish purple with blue, black, clashing colors everywhere, and like he's way too obvious. Anyway, I spent all day on this ridiculous thing. Continue on.
Right. So we see them. Yeah, they check into their bungalow, and everything, you know, from their point of view seems good. But yeah, we see that the Genosians themselves are up to something nefarious. But then we cut back to the Arctic, and this guy, Tiger Hat, and Sabretooth have devised their evil plan in like 10 minutes because the guy goes back to town. They're still having, you know, Wolverine Con. And he's like, hey, by the way, since you're a newcomer, we should go out on a fishing contest. Mm. Like the village elder's like, that's kind of a dumb idea. You're jealous. I think he says your jealousy is making you stupid, which my sons were cracking up about.
Yeah.
But Logan's like, no, it's fine. You know, if it's customary for the new guy to have a fishing contest, then let's do it. So they jump out in their like two person kayak and they head out, and Logan obviously knows something's up. So he pops his claws and he's about to confront this dude. But before anything can happen, they hear an explosion. They look back at like the village and there's all this smoke. So they race back to the village.
Yeah, and for a second, that really did catch me off guard, because you know how we were just talking about, there's no, like, it's all, like, implied violence for the most part. I think in the very beginning, we think that Morph died. You talked about this when you were going through the Night of the Sentinels episodes. But, you know, spoiler, Morph isn't dead. Like, we end up seeing him later. So that kind of freaked me out when they looked back and they saw the smoking village and, like, everything was burned down and you didn't know where the people were. You were led to believe that maybe the people were killed by Sabretooth. And I was like, oh, my God. But no, they are strapped to a bridge with bombs. Now, I want to know where Sabretooth is storing the bombs, because he's got several bombs that he uses throughout this episode.
Yes, and rope and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, he's got a whole tactical sack somewhere. He's got them strapped to the bridge there. He's going to blow it up. I think we might go back to Genosha before we go on with that part of the story.
No, the Genosha stuff is the very last stuff.
Okay, okay.
So we've got all the showdown with Sabretooth, and then we'll go back to Genosha and finish out the episode.
Okay, so, I mean, you can take me through the throwdown with Sabretooth.
Nice, okay, so Tiger Hat wants to help Wolverine. Wolverine's like, dude, you got us into this mess, so no thanks. I'm going to go fight Sabretooth myself. They, you know, some more wrestling around and tussling and snow fights. I think at one point, Sabretooth throws a snowball in Wolverine's eyes, and he's like, my eyes, no! Because his healing factor does not make him impervious to snow in the eye.
Right.
Living here in Colorado, I can attest, snow in the eye, not fun.
Yes, much worse than water in the eye.
Definitely. But Wolverine's able to overcome it for the most part, so they're fighting. But Sabretooth is about to, like, knock him off a cliff again. Tiger Hat comes up, pushes Sabretooth. that gives Wolverine enough time to like scramble up over the cliff. And then Sabretooth actually like picks up and throws Tiger Hat. And then he's rushing at Wolverine. And I love the way that Wolverine beats him is Wolverine just like ducks. Mm-hmm. And Sabretooth goes to tackle him and ends up flying over the cliff himself.
Yeah. Perfect. And that's how a lot of the battles end up. And as a kid, though, it didn't seem that way. But there was very little, you know, blows connecting on the show. But yeah, very cool. And I think there was another point, too, where, see, there's a lot of throwing of people in this series, like throwing or blasting or explosions knocking people into stuff. But yeah, there was one point when I think Sabretooth either throws, I think he throws Wolverine like into a bank or into a wall or something, slams into it and falls down. But that's the most violence you get. But as a kid, it was enough. You know, it felt like they were actually fighting, like there was actually some danger going on.
Yeah.
I did feel like that when that guy tackled Sabretooth, I feel like in real life that would he wouldn't have budged. You know what I mean? That guy trying to tackle him, I don't think would have went down. He would have ran into his leg, and that would have been it.
Assuming he didn't trip over himself on the way to fight someone as big and scary as Sabretooth, and you know, to begin with.
Right. Exactly.
So they beat Sabretooth. The two of them get together and rescue the villagers. I love this part because Wolverine has claws, and it would be really easy to cut the rope. But instead, he grabs the rope with his bare hands and he pulls it apart. He, like, three cords of worth of rope in one motion, just like picks them up and just like, rips them apart instead of just slicing them really quick. I don't know. It didn't take as much time as you would think to rip them apart. So I guess it was fine. But if it was one of those, like, the clock is ticking, it's like, dude, just you have claws. Just slice the rope and let everyone go. But oh well.
They even make Detroit Hat even makes the announcement that they don't have enough time. He's like, oh, there's not enough time. And Warren's like, hold on, we got that. Like, there's plenty of time. I thought he was untying the ropes. I'm like, what is he doing? it's funny though. Yeah. And he gets them loose, throws the bombs over the edge and they explode right at the last second, very action movie style. And the village is saved, but not the village isn't saved. The villagers are saved. Sadly, the village is destroyed, and the village elder is just like, you know, everybody wanted to move anyway, so
yeah, we have our lives, so we're gonna freeze to death in the nighttime, but it's fine. Like, at least we're all together.
Yeah, and Wolverine gets out of having to help them rebuild the village, so that's that.
Yep, he's just like, all right, well, you're all alive now, so I'll be moving on.
Yep, so Wolverine. So then we get the conclusion of, as you said, the Genosha stuff was like the cliffhanger that they leave us on in the end. So this gas starts leaking into the little bungalow that they're staying in. And I thought it was going to just knock them all out, but they actually get out. Gambit blasts the door open, and they come outside, and there's like a sentinel and this big group of military personnel pointing guns at them. They're caught. So was that the final? Was that what we're left with?
Yeah, that was it. The X trio like jumps over a cliff. There's a lot of going over the cliff in this episode. They jump over a cliff into some water, but then they're grabbed and like a sentinel just kind of like stands up. So there's like a sentinel in the water and he's got the three X-Men in his hand. And it says to be continued, and that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, you know, it was a good episode. It was really good. I left it playing when I watched it the first time the other day at home, and so then I got the next episode too, and I was kind of like kicking myself that I didn't get the next episode because we get Cable in the next episode, and there are so many continuity errors with Cable. Like the Cable they introduce is a completely different Cable than we end up getting later. So. I'm not going to ruin that for you, though, because that's something that you'll get to have fun with your next guest.
Very true. Yeah. And all the cameos. Oh, man, it's going to be a great episode.
Well, one more thing I did have written down here. There's a scene that if people have a keen eye, they'll notice it was just for a split second when they switch from like one view of Wolverine to another. It looks like he has long sleeves on because I don't know why, but the colorist made his arms yellow like where he should have skin, like, peach colored skin, he has yellow. So it looks like he's got his cold weather Wolverine suit on for a split second. And then the next time it shows him, he's bare armed. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, you don't look as tough when you got sleeves on in the snow.
Yeah. It looked like that Under Armour. It was like skin tight yellow suit. I was like, what is this? And then they went right back to normal. So it was like, oh, they messed up. That's what happened.
Nice. Well, I think that does it. Brett, thanks so much, man, for coming on, for talking X-Men, walking us through like how you discovered X-Men, how your fandom started, your favorite X-Men, your top five Wolverine villains. Thank you so much for helping me break down this episode. It's been a lot of fun. Now, for all of my listeners who have never heard you before or listened to any of your stuff, tell us, where can my listeners find you?
All right. So a ton of places. Okay. I have a lot of different podcasts. I have a podcast called Daily BS, and it's my catch-all podcast where I talk about everything from stories from my questionable youth to the latest in pop culture and entertainment, just anything I feel like talking about. And I try to do it daily. So you can find that by looking up Daily BS either on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube. There's a video element. So that's Daily BS. And then I also, like, where your listeners will most likely want to go is to follow me over to Marvel Plus, which is a place that you've been a guest. They may already be familiar with it. If not, I would say come on over, because Ryan and I have some really great conversations. I think you've been on 3 or 4 times on Marvel Plus. And so, you know, come over there, check it out. I am a little bit sly, though. I don't put the names of the people that guest host with me in the episode title. So you're going to have to listen to a few of them if you want to find Ryan's episode. Marvel Plus is basically anywhere you get your podcasts. You can find that. So I have some other podcasts, but I'm not going to go into all of those. Maybe we'll save that for next time. If the person that you have for Weapon X Lies and Videotapes just cancels at the last minute, I'm putting myself up there as a secondary option.
All right. Perfect. Well, Bubs, that's going to do it for today's episode. Again, thanks so much for coming on, Brett. And it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you, dude. I'm so glad I actually got to be on your podcast. I hope to come back to do some more of these, because this was a lot of fun. And I can't wait to have you again on Marvel Plus, hopefully pretty soon. So thank you.
So, Bubs, I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Brett as much as I did. It was a lot of fun having someone else on, getting to talk about X-Men, hearing the stories of how people became fans of the X-Men, what they think of the show, and then, of course, breaking down that week's episode. So if you liked this new format, you're in luck. From here on out, or at least from here until the end of season 1 of X-Men the Animated Series, I will have a guest host on, someone who's going to come on, talk X-Men with me, and then help me break down those episodes. So, Bubs, if you like the show and want to keep the conversation going, you can reach out to me on Instagram at TalkinSnicked, or you can reach me via email, TalkSnicked@gmail.com. TalkSnicked@gmail.com. Make sure you tune in next Saturday, as I will be bringing on a brand new guest host, someone who I have podcasted with in the past, someone whose YouTube channel I have featured on, is my good friend Jamie Sherman from Nerdology 5280. So again, make sure you tune in next week. We will be covering season 1, episode 7, Slave Island. One last thing, Bubs, make sure you check out Retcon X, the musician responsible for this upcoming song, Back from the Dead. Retcon X is a musician who created original music inspired by the X-Men, and he has several EPs on Spotify, a Spotify playlist, so definitely go check him out. Until next time, Bubs.